What does a producer actually do? How does one travel from that great idea for a show to a smash hit opening night on Broadway? In the new book, I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed, John Breglio, a Broadway veteran with more than 40 years' experience, shares his roadmap for the hows and wherefores, the do's and don'ts of producing a Broadway play. In the book, Breglio offers concepts for the aspiring producer and entertains with personal anecdotes from his career as a leading theatrical lawyer and producer. He was the producer for both the revivals of A Chorus Line as well as Dreamgirls. The name of the new book is I Want to Be a Producer, and we welcome John Breglio to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
What brought you to want to tell this behind-the-scenes story?
Well, it's behind-the-scenes and also a book that tries to set out what it is to be a producer. I can't tell you how many times I've been to a cocktail party or wherever, and people come up and say, well, what does a producer do? It's amazing how few people really appreciate the complexity and the need to be very knowledgeable to be a producer, because it's not just, you know, the stereotypical guy who is in the producers, Max Bialystock, some overweight guy with a cigar who screws all his investors. You know, you need to be able to acquire properties and rights, and you need to be able to get the material together. You need to hire the writers. You need to advertise, market. You need to collaborate. You need to find a theater. You got to raise the money. I mean, the book really shows you from the very first moment when you have the idea in the shower some morning all the way to opening night on Broadway and all the things as a producer you need to do. It's not the director. It's not the managers. It's the producer. And without a strong, experienced, and someone with taste, you're never going to have a hit on Broadway. And that was why I set out to write this book primarily. And it's not just for lay people. I can tell you, having represented hundreds of actors, directors, and producers and theater owners, there are many, many people in the theater today who do not really understand everything that a producer has to go through. So I tried to take all the information that I learned from decades working with people in the theater and actually producing myself. And I think it's the first time that in one book you can get a complete full appreciation of what you need to do if this is the kind of business you want to get into.
You are a lawyer. You're a theatrical lawyer. So do those two go together, of being a lawyer and a producer?
Well, yeah. What I did for many, many years as a theatrical producer, actually an entertainment lawyer, because I worked in the film business as well as the theater business, I represented hundreds of producers. And as particularly in the theater, I became a kind of shadow producer, meaning that clients would come to me who had never produced on Broadway, and they said, this is what I want to do. I mean, Alan Carr, a very famous West Coast personality, came to me and wanted to do La Cage aux Folles as a stage play. He had never done a stage play. And when I represented him, I basically took him through the motions as his lawyer. So I did that for hundreds of people. I did it for Julie Andrews and Blake Edwards when they did Victor Victoria. And that sort of a career path, after doing that for decades, I finally decided I didn't want to do it for other people anymore. Now I wanted to do it for myself, and that's when I stopped practicing law 10 years ago, and now I'm only producing for myself.
And that... the experience as a lawyer helps in that, though, right? Because
it was essential, yeah.
And what is essential about it in the sense of putting the whole production together? Because most of these large shows obviously have multiple producers, assuming they all play a role.
Well, not really. If you go to the theater today and you look at the program, the playbill, it's this is a recent phenomenon, the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. I'm sad to say there are 45 names above the title, literally 45 names. Sometimes there's only 22. But there are tons of names. Virtually all those people, except for the one or two names at the very top, are investors. They're not producers. They call themselves producers, but they are investors. They wrote out a nice check. In return for writing out a check for $500,000, you are given the right to have your name above the title. But that, those people have no decision-making authority. They did not get the rights. They did not work with the writers. They don't do the advertising. None of that. The first name or two are the producers. And those are the ones who really do the kind of things I talk about in my book. They are the professionals, not the other people. So there aren't that many producers. I can probably count all of Broadway, maybe, you know, on two hands, the really knowledgeable, experienced producers on Broadway.
And for you, it was to be the producer, to actually have your hand in all aspects of the production.
Yeah, I mean, I did Chorus Line, I did Dreamgirls, I did Let's Just Start a Jones. I did 8 of those productions all over the world. I am the name up there. When I did a Chorus Line on Broadway, the revival, I mean, I was involved in the original in 75, but when I revived in 2006, I only had my name above the title. That was it. Nobody else. Everybody else was an investor. So I did it from soup to nuts.
And what does that afford the production as a whole? Not just for you, but to have that one person who is at the helm overseeing everything.
Well, it's critical because what a really good producer does is he or she brings the objectivity necessary for the creative people to do what they are doing, which is very subjective. The book writer, the composer, the lyricist, the director, the choreographer, that's your core creative team. They are immersed in the creative process and are doing what they think is best from a totally subjective point of view. They should not worry about, well, am I going to sell a ticket with this or not sell a ticket, and how am I going to, you know, market this idea. That is what the producer does. And the producer needs to be involved every step of the way to see how the thing is developing. So the first thing you do is a reading after the creative people have written the show or whatever. Or maybe you do a little bit of a workshop, and then you look at it with the creative people, and the producer has to be able to say objectively, you know what, I love what you've done, but I can't sell this, or I can't market this, or this is too violent, or this is too soppy, or this is too... They have to have a sense of what ultimately they're going to be able to sell when they raise from their investors $15 million for a musical, or $4 million for a play. They can't even raise the money if they have the creative team go off and do things that are just not suitable for Broadway. It may be suitable for off Broadway, but not for Broadway. Is a treacherous territory these days. And there's a limited kind of material in many ways that you can hope to produce today on Broadway. So a producer has to be the one that's constantly monitoring this, making sure the collaboration works with everyone, and that there are no, you know, that it's not hitting all the shoals off the shore. That's what you have to do.
John Breglio's new book is I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. The book is published by Applause. Is that why, for many of the reasons that you just mentioned, that revivals work so well on Broadway?
Well, they work so well, Joe, only these days with a major star.
Right.
It's a sad commentary, but you may have a great show, such as the show that just won the Tony the revival of A View from the Bridge. But it had no stars. It made no money. It closed. It's not running now, even though it won the Tony. Or you have a show, it's not a revival, but King Charles III that came over from England,
right,
got the most spectacular reviews. It closed. No star. Or you have a musical. There was a musical, Nice Work If You Can Get It, with Matthew Broderick, and he was not a big enough star to get people to come. It closed.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have coming in Hello, Dolly! With Bette Midler, that will sell out. That's a big star. If you had Hello, Dolly! With nobody big in it, maybe it'll last 6 to 8 months. Look at Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler on the Roof is on Broadway now.
Danny Burstyn. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's not the kind of person who sells out the house. Danny Burstyn is known by, you know, Broadway theater goes, but Danny Burstyn is not Bette Midler. And that show is struggling. I don't know how much longer it can run. So revivals today only work with a major star. You can't. I did Dreamgirls all over the country, revived Dreamgirls, and I did not bring it into Broadway because I couldn't get a major star to play it. And I was convinced that if I brought it into Broadway with a major star, we'd only run about 6 months. And that's not long enough to get your money back.
So the show that just won the Tony for Best Revival was The Color Purple. Would that have made it as long as it has without Jennifer Hudson, who has now since left the production?
Well, I don't think Jennifer Hudson sold that many tickets, actually, because it was a small role, and they didn't bill her as a star. They just said she was one of three. Color Purple is very interesting. Got spectacular reviews, which helps. And this woman who won, Erivo, who won the Tony,
right,
is staggering. I mean, when I say staggering, I don't use that word often. I've, you know, been around for 40 years. She is truly staggering.
Your jaw drops when you hear her sing.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I literally dropped. I turned to my wife and I said, "I'm speechless. I can't say anything.
No,
look,
it's
what's
amazing
going on here." This was during the performance. So that show, however, was not selling out. Has not been selling out. I think it'll do better now, and I think it'll eventually recoup it. It really struggled. If it weren't for that performance by Erivo, and not having won the award, I worry that it would not recoup.
So if you have a show, I find this fascinating. So if you have a show like Waitress, and Jesse Mueller, who had great success in Beautiful, and this is much like Danny Burstyn, known in the theater community, probably not known very well outside, if at all, of that community. And is that enough?
Mostly never. It's mostly not enough. Now, Waitress is doing well. It's doing $1 million a week. It remains to be seen if it can survive. One of the reasons it may do well, and this is a quirky thing for this season, Hamilton, like A Chorus Line 40 years ago, is a monster hit. You cannot get a ticket. Yet we have about to have tens of millions of people come to New York City for the summer, right? Broadway is what everybody wants to see. Anybody who comes to visit New York, almost everybody wants to see at least one show. I mean, it's phenomenal how many tourists want to see a Broadway show. They're not going to be able to get a ticket at all for Hamilton. So they want to go see the next show. They're going to say, what's new? Unless they haven't seen Phantom of the Opera. But if they want to see a new show, my guess, I was talking to the producer of that show recently, my guess is that Waitress is going to be the next one on their list. The others are revivals. Now, there's On Your Feet, which is doing well also, but that's because of Gloria Estefan, right?
Right.
That has that name. She's not in it, but it has that name, and it has a strong dance component. So the shows that may not have worked, those few shows that are left from this season, I think are going to benefit from Hamilton because you can't get into Hamilton. It's impossible. but these shows are not clear winners. I mean, they're going to struggle. It's hard. They are not complete sellouts by any stretch.
What does it say about the work itself? I saw two shows this season that I thought were better than they lasted. One was Bright Star, which I thought was a really well-done show. I also enjoyed Tuck Everlasting, which closed minutes after opening. But again, it didn't have the star, and in the case of Bright Star, it didn't have the Steve Martin, Edie Brickell link either. So what does quality bring to it, of the fact that you actually have a story, you have a beautiful set, you have a good songs, good music, and something that people enjoy once they're in there, but how do you get them in there?
Yeah, well, it's what we call, when we see certain shows, we'll say they're too soft for Broadway today. Broadway has become a venue where, for better or worse, and when I look at it for worse, a lot of the audience is one that has brought the common denominator way down. First of all, there's the family show. There is the family show, and that has been dominated and continues to be dominated by Disney. They've got Lion King, they've got Aladdin, they've got others coming in. They dominate it. They do high quality family show. There's no question about it. You can't really compete with them. Tuck Everlasting was too soft. It wasn't, first of all, it wasn't a known commodity. No, this is not Lion King. This is not a, you know,
no.
I mean, the name was not, and they had no star. And it was very, you saw the show, right?
Yeah.
It's very soft. It's not something that children, I think, would walk out and immediately tell all their friends to see. So there's no surprise to me that that didn't work. It also didn't get very good reviews, so that doesn't help. Bright Star, very, very soft show. I enjoyed it a lot, but there's nothing to sell there except Steve Martin's show. But Steve Martin's not in it, although he's been, you know, playing a couple of songs intermission. There was no big star in it. It was like, that show was not unlike Madison County, you know.
Bridges of Madison County.
Bridges of Madison.
Yeah.
Very much like it. Beautiful score. No star. Much too soft. Closed very quickly. Those shows, sad to say, do not have much of a place on Broadway anymore. You can't sell those tickets. You can sell a big Disney name show. Yes. I mean, will people go see Frozen? You know, I'd be crazy. We'd be nuts if we didn't think it's going to be a landmark show. Will people go see Harry Potter? Of course. So those family shows will go through the roof. Then you've got everything else, and everything else either needs a big star or it's once in a two-generation hit like Hamilton, A Chorus Line, Hamilton, Rent. In the last 40 years, you really can't name other shows that were like those. And that's, you know, three shows over 40 years. What else has been around? The things that run, you know, 3-4 years, and but nothing like those. So there is still a place, and that's why you can still raise money. When a Hamilton opens and still has no star, because Lin-Manuel Miranda was not a star, now he's on every magazine cover.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, no one really knew him well. People still say, aha, you can still get the Golden Ring with a show like that. And that's enough for people to still hope and pray that they'll be able to get that Golden Ring. But Broadway is a very limited venue now. And look at Paramore. I thought that would work because it's like Vegas. And Paramore got such terrible reviews, I just don't know whether that can survive or not. And it's doing $1 million, but we'll see. Maybe the tourists will go. They don't care about reviews.
Cirque du Soleil on Broadway. John Breglio is a theater producer. He's also the author of the new book, I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. When you look at a show like, I thought of this when I was watching the Tonys, because Hamilton was trying to ultimately beat the record of the producers, which the title of your book comes from. There is a show I find interesting because why is that not still playing?
Again, I mentioned this in my book. It's a very interesting phenomenon, very interesting. It's unique in my experience. I was there opening. I went through the whole thing. I had a lot of history with the producers, but I won't go into that. And when I finally saw it and everybody saw it, I said, this is a monster hit. okay? This is one of the funniest evenings ever on Broadway. These performances are through the roof. The score is very funny. The choreography is staggering. I mean, look, it wins 12 Tony Awards. I thought it would run forever. And now here's the funny thing about that show. Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick leave. And they bring in all these other people.
Yep.
And suddenly, people are not talking about it the way they did before. It's, the word of mouth has changed. It's not nearly as strong. And it keeps running. I mean, it ran for 4 years, five years. But for some reason, it got more and more diminished. It then opens in London with a totally different cast. I think Nathan was in it for a while. Didn't run for more than a year. It goes in Los Angeles on the road. They try to change, they put Martin Short in, and I forgot who else was in it.
With
was not terribly
Jason George
Jason
Costanza.
Alexander. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Alexander.
It just didn't jibe with people for some reason, and no one really will ever know exactly. That combination of Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane, they could never replace. And somehow or other, the piece had, you know, a natural death, a premature death probably, because by rights, that show, given what it was like when it opened,
right,
and the critical reception and everybody talking about it, you would have thought it ran for 10 years.
And doesn't that indicate, because I saw the original, and then I also did see the L.A. version of that show. And the one thing that struck me about the L.A. version is it showed many of the flaws that I did not see because of Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick.
See, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you what you're saying is what is part of the explanation, which is that the power of those performances was so enormous, and you love seeing them so much, and they were so great, that the show, per se, had weaknesses that you overlooked. And that's very astute. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, that's a good way of explaining, perhaps, why it was short-lived. I mean, I'll give you an example. I don't know, maybe I should say this, but when I put on the cast album for the producers, it was tough going. I mean, the score was not really all that interesting. But then you go to the theater and you watch Nathan Lane do those numbers, and they're hysterical, just watching him.
Right. So when I'm talking to you about this, there is a hint of dismay about really the future, because obviously you want new work. You want more Hamiltons. You want more things that are new and exciting and bringing up new talent. And quite frankly, sometimes even bringing in the star doesn't do it. That isn't good enough. So we're all just trying to figure out the key to this, right? And especially you as a producer.
You're putting your finger on what producers worry about and talk about every day. I cannot tell you. I have this conversation not only with producers, but with writers and directors. We talk about it all the time. The dumbing down of Broadway, there's no doubt about it. And there's nothing worse than producing something or writing something, worrying about whether the audience will like it or not. That's a terrible way of creating art. The way you create art is the artist writes what he or she feels they have to do. This is what they have to write. Not they're worrying about, oh, well, you know, will Joe Blow from Minnesota like it? But the ability to keep a commercial play going today has become so restricted in so many arbitrary ways. You need a star. You need a big family show. Look, Finding Neverland, which should be a family show, that's closing. I mean, that didn't wind up getting its money back even. So it's so restricted that you have to bang your head against the wall to figure out how am I going to, you know, because you have to worry about making money. So what you come down to is going back again to the not-for-profit theaters and the regional theaters in this country. That's where the work, the best work, has to come from. Manhattan Theater Club, the Public Theater, the Roundabout, the Second Stage, the Playwrights Horizon, Goodman Theater in Chicago, in L.A., the La Jolla, all those great theaters, Steppenwolf in Chicago, those are where you have to look for the talent and for the new stuff. And hopefully when you have a play such as Osage County that came from there, there's a play with no stars, one of the rarities, you know, what was it, 5 years ago, comes out of Steppenwolf, gets the most incredible reviews, and manages to win the Tony and makes money. There's a rarity, but you have to hope and pray that we can continue to find the not-for-profit theaters to develop and bring those plays forward and either put a star in them or hope that they are so wonderful that, you know, they'll run. That's our only hope at this point, that those, because the Broadway producers are not going to take the risk that the not-for-profits take in developing this talent. They're just not going to. I know a very young, not very young, she's a young playwright who's writing beautiful work, and right now she's getting her work done, in the not-for-profit regional theaters, and maybe someday she'll be lucky enough to get on Broadway. But right now she has to hope that she can just continue to be done off-Broadway. There's really no space for her there. But if you're interested and you're lucky enough to get Harry Potter, or you're lucky enough to get Aladdin, or you're lucky enough to get, you know, those shows, Frozen, but they're all, you know, big Disney shows, then that's what's taking all the theater space on Broadway.
The name of the book is I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. John Baraglio, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for talking to us.
Well, many thanks.
Again, the name of the book is I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. The book is published by Applause. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.